Okay, EO, so we're going to learn actually sort of segments from two chapters today, because he answers the issue that he's answering, I believe, is the patience issue. That's what we saw in the beginning of EO chapter 7. Chapter 7 gave us the impression the person is running out of time. Because what Eliphaz has said to him essentially was, just wait, because eventually, even though bad things are happening to good people now, eventually you'll if you're truly righteous, so God will give you a break in the end. And just to review chapter 7, I guess chapter 7 starting from verse 1. So he says, "Halot tzavala no shaliyar." Man has a duty on earth. "Ukimei sachir yamav," and his days are like the days of a renter. He rents life. "Ke'eved yishach sale." Moreover, he's like the servant that begs for the evening to come. That is, he's busy, he's tired from a hard day's work. Uchasachir, and like a person who rents a property, kaveh po'alo, he wants his money, or rents himself out, he wants to be paid. Kein inchalti li yarchei shav, so were my months given in vain. Vilelot amal minuli, and I have nothing but nights of trouble.
Eob speaking.
It's not clear who he's responding to. He's responding to Eliphaz. He hasn't turned towards God yet, but he will soon. Pasuk Dalet, Imshachati v'amarti. So even if I went to sleep right now, I close my eyes to avoid my pain. V'amarti, I would say, Matay akum midat arif. I would walk around at night. I wouldn't get any sleep. V'savati nidudim adei nashif. Until the light comes, I can't sleep. I'm in so much pain. I can't pretend it's not here. Lavash psari rima v'gushafar. My flesh is covered with boils, with disgust. Oli raga v'yimaes. In a second, my skin's going to melt off. Yamai kalu mine areg. My days are ending like a wharf. V'yichlu be'efes tikva. With no string or hope left over. It's a beautiful phrase, by the way. V'yichlu be'efes tikva. It will end as it with no hope and also with no string. That is, the string runs out on my little shuttle has no string left. Zechor ki ruach chayai. Please remember that my life, I'm just human. Lo tashuv eini lirot tov. Now here it gets a little bit sharp. Right now, all he seems to be saying, up to Pasuk Vav, all he seems to be saying is, I'm running out of time. I really don't have time to wait for all of the promises of glory at the end. I'm human, and when a person has a miserable life like this, it's like a field worker working in the heat of the sun, all he wants to do is for it to be over. You hear that sometimes, you know. You hear that sometimes. People's lives, if they don't look for when they, you know, people don't look for when they're going to heal up. They look for when it's going to be over sometimes, and that's certainly Yehov's situation.
So on the other hand, he's only had this 7 days.
No, he was sitting in Shiva for 7 days.
Right.
He
well, that's
boils,
what they're talking, isn't it?
He had the boils for a while. He lost all his kids.
I thought the kids came first. He lost the kids,
everything
and then
happened at
everything.
Once. And then there was a time period when he refused to curse God. And then after a time period, after losing all of his kids and all of his possessions, becoming poor and cast away, and he got this skin disease that created a personal pain. He was literally in physical pain. And then he sat down for a shiva. When he sat down for a shiva, it wasn't, I don't think, literally a shiva for his kids. Well, it could be. He sat down to mourn. I don't know if it was within necessarily the 7 days that his children had died.
Because I thought there was a commentary that said that they were going to shiva call.
Yeah, we learned out shiva from this, but then you'd have to say that he got the boils and had the conversation with his wife on the same day that his kids died.
Or
perhaps he was waiting
during
to
the
bury,
shiva.
Or during the Onan period when he was burying him. I think it's possible to understand this, that he was sitting in mourning for himself and his life more than for his kids, also for his kids. In Pasuk Zion, it gets a little bit touchy, and I'm going to have to read you Rashi. It's very interesting, Rashi. Zechor ki ruach chayai, remember that my life is but wind. Lo tashuv eini liro tov. My eyes will not come back to see good. That's a direct response. That is, you're promising me good. I won't see the good. I don't believe you, he says. Lo tishureini ein roi. Nobody will see, no watchers will see me. The word, there's a word we say in davening, ki, is something ashurenu. So Ashurenu means to see, too. So when you come across that in Tehillim, much about davening, you know when it says Ashurenu, it means to see. Lo tishurenu ein roi, ein nechabi ve'eineni. People will be looking for me, but I won't be here. Kala anan vayelach. clouds, when the clouds are finished, they go. And just like the clouds, when they're finished, they disappear. Kein yored sha'ol lo ya'aleh. So too, to somebody who goes down to his grave, he does not come back. Lo yashuv od b'beito, he does not go back to his home. V'lo yikirenu od mekomo, and nobody remembers his place. That's essentially where it is. I'll read you Rashi. That really should surprise anybody who's familiar with Torah, Talmud Torah, the Torah about that. Rashi says like this, and he's quoting Chazal. Rashi's not doing it himself, he quotes Gemara. He says like this. In Pasuk Tet, Kala Anan Vayela, when a cloud goes, disappears, Ken Yored Shol, Lo Ya'aleh. So Rashi says like this. Sorry, actually it talks about verse 7 where it says, Lo tashuv eini liroto, my eyes will not come back to see the good. Lachar mita, it means after death. The kan kafar Eov v'tkliat ha-meitim. And here's where Eov rejected the idea of resurrection of the dead. There's all kinds of problems with that Gemara, of course. First of all, Eov's not Jewish.
Only Jews are going to be resurrected?
No, but I'm not entirely sure that there's an inu fear by a Jew. It's not one of the seven mitzvot they know. Say you have to leave and say at the or you know. Because the question is, you know, so what? Okay. Why are Chazal making a big deal about the fact that Eov was called Kriyat HaMeitim? So what you could say is non-Jews also have to believe in the idea of Kriyat HaMeitim. But if that's so, and first of all, your question is very good. Is Kriyat HaMeitim just for Jews? Certainly, if we take Chazal at a simple value, I assume that Kriyat HaMeitim is for non-Jews also. Because if Chazal are upset at Eo for rejecting the idea of Kriyat HaMeitim, and he's not Jewish, according to almost every opinion, almost no opinion has him as Jewish, so then it must be that he was rejecting something that should have been his right, in which case Kriyat HaMeitim would apply to non-Jews. We should maybe go back and tell that to something to think about here. But also Rashi does something interesting. Because Rashi doesn't comment here, and apparently Chazal don't comment on the pasuk that you'd expect it. Vayelech ken yored sha'ol lo ya'aleh. Somebody who goes to the grave will come back. Why say on the pasuk, lo tashuv eini liroto? It's a much more... Because I think there's another way to understand that. When you say, Eov is right now in a very bad situation, so what you could say about lo tashuv eini liroto is I won't see any more good.
It's not going to get better.
Yeah, nothing's going to get better. Why specifically pick on that pasuk to make sure... Why pick on that pasuk specifically? By the way, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Ibn Ezra disagrees. Oh, I don't have the Ibn Ezra in here. Oh, I do. Hold on. Let's see what the Ibn Ezra says. I thought the Ibn Ezra disagreed. No, I'm sorry. Ibn Ezra says like this. We're on 7, 8, 7, 7, 7, 8, 7, 9, 7, 10. We're talking about whether Eov is rejecting Kriyat HaMeitim. So actually, Ibn Ezra is not going to reject Chazal. He says, Achar Moti, Lo Tashuv Eini, Achar Moti. That's what he says, after the death. Very strange. Because they don't want to... And the Malvim also. Lo Tashurenu Eidro E. Hainu, these are modern parish, 1800s. Hainu Achar Ibadon Hagviya, after the body is gone away, Bimota. Sha'az Yitalein Me'ein Kol, and then it will disappear from everybody. Ve'ein Lo Tashurenu Eidro, and nobody will see me ever again. Me'az Yefshar Shiyashuv Lirot Be'or Achayim, and I'll never see the light of day. Halo Atal Yidei Yisurim Shnechshav Kilum Ah. So now he had something else. Halo ata al yudea yisurim. Now, because of all of my pain and my suffering, ki'ilu meit ata eineni garua yoter. My eyes are certainly worse. And I think he may be opening up a door here to some other opinion of whether he's talking about Kriyat HaMeitim. But before we do that, I'd like to show you another part of Eov, which actually is more explicit in its apparent rejection of Kriyat HaMeitim. So if you would, turn to Eo of Yud-Dalad. This isn't a response. Yud-Dalad is a response. It's a very long chapter. It starts at Yud-Bet. and he gets three chapters of talking. This is after the conversation. This is after Sofar's conversation.
Starting at Pasuk Yud Bet.
Pasuk Aleph. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. And we're going to get back to it because it's important to read Sofar's words, but I just want to support Perek Zion a little bit. And it is important to see why he's waiting until Yudalit to say the words so clearly. But I just want to show you that there is this issue. Adam Yeludisha. Actually, let's start with the previous verse because Yudalit is in the wrong place. The Christian, Stephen Langton, Archbishop Stephen Langton, put it in the wrong place. Let's start with Kaf Chet, which is the last verse of 13. V'hu kirakav, a man is like, I don't know, some kind of vegetable, I think, yivleh, who withers away. Kiveged achlo ash, like a cloak that is eaten by a moth. Now, if you remember, we had that idea of ash, the bate chomer, but there we describe the word ash not as a moth so much, but as a house of moths, a cocoon, that is, he withers away. And that is also, I think, potentially an idea here. Hu kerekev yivleh kiveged achalo ash. The beged I think it's talking about is not necessarily, it's possible it's that a moth eating clothes, possible, but it's also possible it's talking about it's probably the correct interpretation. It could be the other one is different. Adam Yeludi Shah, man is born of woman. Kitsar Yamim Usva Roges, he has very few days and they're full of pain. Kitsit Yatsav Yimal, he's like a little, a sprout, a bud, which comes out and it withers away, Vayimal. Vayivrach Katsel Velo Yamod, he runs away like a shadow and does not stand. Avze pakachta inecha. Actually, okay. I think that. Let's see. I think that pretty much sums it up. Pasuk bet, I think, is the one that people focus on. Kitzit yatzav imal, vayivrach kitzel v'lo yamod. That is, he disappears. He never comes back. So the question is he rejecting Kriyat HaMeitim here? Seems to be he's saying that he's not interested in Kriyat HaMeitim. And the only problem that we have with that is if that's true, Eov is not the guy we thought he was. Right? I mean, Eov comes off at the end of having only spoken truth towards God. He even says so. I've never lied about God. And in fact, at the very end, let's take a look at the very end where God speaks for Eov and when God comes around, he never says, you're wrong, or how dare you speak that way. He says, you don't understand what's going on. He never criticizes him for Kriyat HaMeitim. And this is, of course, a Jewish author writing this book. So if our hero is questioning Kriyat HaMeitim, isn't he questioning the basic principles upon, assuming that he has to, isn't he questioning the basic principles upon which the religion is based? So here I want to take a look at something and see what's going on here. The word Sha'ol comes up. Now, where do we have that word Sha'ol? If we take a look in verse in chapter 7. Does he actually say the word Sha'ol in chapter 7? Yeah. Let's go there. Because that's kind of the key word. Here it is. Chapter 7, verse 9. Tala anan vayelech. He disappears like a cloud. Ken yored Sha'ol lo yaleh. I mean, that right there, you got kofar b'tchiyat ha'meitim. Or do you? That is, when somebody thinks of Sha'ol in the Torah, how do they normally think of the word Sha'ol? Who's the first person to discuss Sha'ol in the Torah?
No.
Yaakov Avinu. So what did Yaakov say? Let's take a look. Yaakov spoke in after Yosef was taken away. So if you have if they're Chumashim there, do you mind just running down a Chumash or three? So let's see. I always have a hard time finding this. So one place he talks about it. Yeah, that's one. There's another one later on. Yeah, he repeats, actually, the one I found right here is Mem Dalad. Mem Dalad Lamed Aleph, which is the very end, by Vayigash. That's the one. The other one that he talks about is Lamed.
So well, there's one in...
go ahead.
In 37,
yeah.
Pasuk 35.
So that's a good one also. After he finds out that that Yosef has been sold. Yeah, that's good. So let's do that one then. 37, which one?
Pasuk 35.
So it says, Vayikumu kol banav kol banav lenachamo. They're trying to comfort him. Vayimaim hit nachem. He refuses. Vayomer ki ered el bini avel shaola. So normally when we think of the word Sha'ol, we actually don't even, what do we think of? We think of hell, right?
Yeah.
That's normally the concept. Where does that come from? That comes from Korach, of course. Right? Korach, the mouth opened up and went down to Sha'ol.
Alive.
However, here, what?
Alive.
Alive to Sha'ol, right. But the truth is, the simple understanding of the word Sha'ol is not that. The simple of the word Sha'ol is described, he's not saying that he's going to hell. He's not saying Yosef's going to hell. It means the grave. There's another proof of that it doesn't mean, and that not only that, I want to see, there's another proof of that, which is in Yonah. Yonah says that when he was drowning in the water, he was going down to Sha'ol until God saved him. It doesn't mean he was going to hell, although maybe you could take that harsh view of Yonah. It means that he was dying. It was simply, he's going to die. But if that's true...
But what's the connotation of Sha'ol as opposed to Mavet?
The place, a physical place. Mavet is something that you do, and Sha'ol is the place that you do it. Sha'ol, generally speaking, it means means grave. So it certainly doesn't mean hell. That's an idea that really needs to be gotten rid of. I mean, there is an idea that there's a Kabbalistic idea, perhaps, and Chazal may talk about the idea of this place where you go for Yom HaDin, and it's very scary, etc., etc., But by and large, the simple pshat is that it means grave. But if that's true, then Eov comes off very much as a kofar b'tchiyat ha-meitim. The only question is, where is tchiyat ha-meitim written in the Torah? See, that's an interesting idea. That is, here Eov, if we're saying that Eov is saying, I am going to, that is, if that's what is he saying to Eliphaz? Is he trying to make a statement? First of all, there's two problems. Eliphaz never told him that he's not going to be resurrected. Eliphaz told him, wait, things will be okay. So first of all, what kind of answer is that? Second of all, if he's kofar b'tchiyat ha-meitim, then wow, he's not much of a character to be learning his book and to be writing a whole book about him.
Eliphaz is not Jewish.
Which is another issue. If he's not Jewish, then who cares? Correct, that's a third issue. And the fourth issue is, b'tchiyat ha-meitim is very elusive. It's so elusive that in Gemara Sanhedrin, I'll read you that you may know this, famous Perek Chelek, starts off with the following Mishnah. I'll read it to you. This is the Gemara that talks about Tchiyat HaMeitim and Olam Haba. And it says as follows. Find it?
I thought Tchiyat HaMeitim actually came from Yefesto.
Oh, we'll get there in a second.
Bones.
Yeah, we'll get there in a second. Hold on. Excellent. We'll get there in a second. That is, if this is where Tchiyat HaMeitim is rejected, what I think we need to do is balance that, is find out where is it accepted. And I think if you ask people, most people would point to the bones, which is exactly what you said. So I'll read it to you. It's basically one of the principles. Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Olam Haba. Everybody, all Jews have a place in the world to go, whatever that means, world to come. Why? Shneamar bimcha v'amcha kulam tzadikim olam yirshu aretz netzer matei masei yidei lipayer ve'elu she'en lam chelek olam haba. And these are the only people that lose out. Ha'omer ein tchiyat ha-meitim min ha-Torah. By the way, it doesn't say somebody rejects tchiyat ha-meitim. So somebody rejects the idea that tchiyat ha-meitim is for the Torah. So clearly, it's rejectable. Right? That is, if you said explicitly that if it says, you know, if it says Bereishit Bara Elohim et ha-Shamayim v'aretz, and by the way, it's going to be tchiyat ha-meitim, okay, I believe it's tchiyat ha-meitim. It's from the Torah. So the question is, why are Chazal focusing on the idea that it's not just somebody who believes in Tchiyat HaMeitim, somebody who believes in Tchiyat HaMeitim from the Torah? Let's continue on. The Ein Torah Min HaShabayim, somebody doesn't accept the Torah comes from heaven. Vapikoros, and the Gemara goes into those various things. you would think that the pasuk it refers to is the famous pasuk in Yechezkel that we read on Shavuot, right? No, Shavuot is Ma'aseh Merkava. When do we read the dry bones? Pesach.
That's it.
But you know what's interesting? The Gemara doesn't refer to it at all. You know what the Gemara comes up to with Chiyat HaMeitim? You wouldn't believe what it comes up with. Let me read you the Pesukim. So most of them are from the Torah itself. First of all, it wants something directly from the Torah. That's first. The first one it says, if you have the Chumash, it's unbelievable. You should take a look at the Pasuk. Open up to Devarim Lamed Aleph.
Which pasuk?
I don't know. It doesn't list it here.
Mm.
Run out. Look for the words by Yomar Hashem El Moshe Hincha Shochev. Let me see if I could if I get the actual source. Devarim 31:16. I mean, you're not going to believe what goes on with this pasuk. This is one of the primary sources for it. 31:16. This is where he's telling Moshe he's got to go. This is where Moshe has to go up to the top of the mountain. So what does it say? Let's read the simple pshat of the pasuk. 31:16. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Hincha shochev imamotecha. You're going to rest with your fathers. Are you going to die? V'kam ha'am hazeh, and this nation will arise. V'zana acharei Elohei nechar, acharei nechar aretz, asher hu v'asham kirbo. And after you die, everything's going to go higgly-piggly, right? Everything, you know, of a leader that could keep leading them anymore. Because anybody have the English there? Can you read me the English? Read the English of verse 16?
Hashem said to Moses, behold, you will lie with your forefathers, but this people will rise up and stray after the gods of the foreigners of the land, in whose midst it is coming, and it will forsake me and annul my covenant that I have sealed with it.
Right. So the word vikam, to arise, refers to what? That's a predicate. Which subject does it refer to?
The people.
People. Listen to what Chazal say. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Hincha shochev imamotecha, vikam. You follow? Vikam. Stop. And by the way, the Tanaim are not completely against it. Take a look at the Tanaim above the word vikam. Do you see? If you look at the Tanaim, the trope. Vikam is a tlishak tana. That's a stop. Vikam. If that verb was really predicated by ha'amazeh, there should not be a tlishak tana there. It should be, I don't know, something, a munach, something. It should be connected. There is a stop there. Now, it's not an etnachta. It's not a full stop.
But that could just be the chicken and the egg issue. They may have put the stop there because they were going back to what the Gemara said.
Correct.
Based upon
you're opening up a big can of worms. But either way, you're right. And that means that the Masoretes who put these Tamin in the 600s, 700s, 800s up to the 900s read this pasuk in this way. That's the way they interpreted this pasuk. It's an old question, by the way, whether Masoretes put in the Tamin. We don't believe that they put in the Kudot by themselves. They were copyists. They were not Parshanim. One of the biggest ideas of biblical criticism is they put in the Nekudot by themselves. It's provable that's not nonsense. They simply had a Mesorah of how it was pronounced. And I could read you Gemaras. I could read you a fascinating Gemara that proves that there was a Mesorah of how things were pronounced. Even though they came up with the system of pointing of Nekudot, they were just copyists.
Nekudot includes the Trup?
No, that's the question. They put in the Nekudot and the Trup. They did. The question is, Nekudot, essentially every religious Jewish scholar, every Jewish religious scholar, based on Gemaras, which are very simple to read and very clear, know that Nekudot preceded the Masoretes, who put it in the 600, 700, 800 of the Common Era, and they were just copying down what they had heard. However, we don't know about the Tamim. We do not know. There was quite a dispute in the scholarly world, even among the religious, whether the Tamim were also inherited, the way to sing it was also inherited, or whether they were, in this case, acting as exegetes, whether they were explaining what the Tam would be. So here you're right. Either they could be, if you say that they were exegetes, they were Parshanim, and they were following the lead of the Gemara. If they weren't, they were just copying down what they had, that was the way they inherited from their fathers. It was Kabbalah Moshe Mishina. By the way, the Gemara doesn't take this lying down. And the problem is with the rest of the pasuk. There's no verb for amazeh. Look at this. Hincha shochev imavotecha v'kam, and you will arise. What do you do with the ha'amazeh? You have to do v'ha'amazeh v'zanachare Elohim acharim. You really, the vav is getting in the way. You see that? It should really be ha'amazeh yizneh achare Elohei nechar. That would be better. Get rid of the vav and put in a yud. Well, Lord knows we don't want to start doing that to our Torah.
If this refers to Moshe,
yeah.
Isn't the conjugation wrong, though? Would
be at the end
person?
If you have two verbs.
No, I mean the form of come would be
yeah, you can use past tense for future tense. Oh yeah, it happens all the time. Oh absolutely, you can use future tense for past tense and past tense for future tense. I'll give you an example. What's the name of Avram's first son?
Ishmael.
Ishmael, but it means what? God heard.
Right.
Not God will hear.
Right.
God heard. David says so. Ki shama Elohim. So you should know that that the idea of past tense and future tense are not so. I give you numerous examples where past tense is future tense and future tense is past tense. It's true that 95% of the time it sticks to the rule, but there's a good 5% that it doesn't. You have to be attentive to these things, so there's no guarantee. But you are missing a verb there. Then the word yizneh is very difficult.
What does the pasuk mean? So you will lie with your ancestors and rise.
And then rise. End of story. Now I got a new story for you. You should know that until that happens, these people are going to go bananas in their land without you. It's not an easy read. Is that what you want to say?
Yeah.
It's not an easy read. And in fact, the Gemara says that. The Dilma Kam Ha'am Hazev Zana. What if it doesn't mean that? What if it means that the Kam Ha'am Hazev? What if the word Kam refers to the next part? So the Gemara goes back and forth. It doesn't really have a completely satisfactory answer.
Actually, it's Lishkatana usually.
What's that?
Doesn't Lishkatana usually relate to the
Is it connected to the next verb?
Yeah.
Phew. I thought Lishkatana is a separation. Is it always connected to the Merchat Tikhai afterwards? I'm not so sure.
No.
It could be. I'm gonna have to look it up. And there's a set of rules. Right, connected
to
the Kabbalah. So if that's true, and I'm not saying that it's not, I'm not an expert at Tamim, then this seems to definitely go against. So then what's happened to the part that the masters are ignoring?
I'm just thinking when I've lain, that is a natural connection.
Yeah, there are also other stops, which it's true, but here's an example. The Pashta and Zakef Katon, people always read that together, but it's not the Pashta, it's a Zakef Katon.
Pashta you have before other things too.
That's true, but the pastab is Sakev Katon. When you read it, when you're analyzing text, you have to think of it not exactly as a comma, but there is a breath there between the pastab and the Sakev Katon. And the pastab looks like this, and the Sakev Katon is the two dots. Most people read them right in together. You know, na 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 na.
Well, yeah, and they're independent notes, but the two words come together.
Well, they're considered a hefsek, and I can show you cases where you have to understand them as a hefsek, otherwise the pasuk doesn't make sense. Yeah, I mean, it's not an etnafta, it's not a sof pasuk, but it's not even a revi'i, but there is a certain stop to it.
I find interesting, though, is that the Hartsgrove translation.
Oh, it sticks with the... Oh, why? Because
the Gemara.
Well, the Gemara... No, because the Gemara is inconclusive. The Gemara just doesn't know what to do. Yeah, let me read the whole thing. It's unbelievable Gemara. Shalu minin et Rabbi Gamliel, the minim, who were the early Christians, proto-Christians, asked Rabbi Gamliel, minayin shekadosh baruch hu mechayim etim. Amar lahem min ha-toro, min ha-neviyu, min ha-ktuvim. I got my old bases covered. So it says, v'lo kiblu mimenu min ha-toro. What does that mean? V'lo kiblu mimenu toro. What does that mean? Hold on a second. We didn't receive from the Torah? Just a second. Oh, they didn't accept this proof from the Torah. What was his proof? He said, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe Hincha Shochev Atach Lekam." And Amulo, so the minim said to him, "You're reading the verse wrong. You're reading the verse like the art. You're reading like the verse like thing. We got the art scroll on our side to back up our Christian faith. I don't want to get in trouble here, but okay." So he says, "I got minivim. I got from the prophets." Now, by the way, you would expect him to quote from Yechezkel. He doesn't touch it. Nobody touches it. There is an argument later on in the Gemara, but nowhere is it brought up. I'll show you the final proof from the. You want to know the final proof from the Torah? It's an unbelievable proof. I'll get there in a second. So where's the Nevi'im? Dichtiv in Yishayahu Yichyu Matecha Nivlatei Yikumun Akitzav Ranu Shochnei Afar. People who are in the dust, who are sleeping in the dust, will get up and dance. Now the simple side of that pasuk doesn't mean dead people. It means people in great deal of trouble will get up and dance. But nonetheless, that's how it's read. And then it says, by the way, they quote Yechezkel, and they quote a different, so they say, wait a second, V'dilma meitim shehichye Yechezkel. So what does it say? Maybe those meitim are the same meitim that Yechezkel brought back to life. And what does Rashi say, I believe, on this? Rashi immediately jumps on this and it says, what does that mean? Because everybody accepted the idea that the dry bones that Yechezkel were talking about were the people who were in Babel, who were living in destitution, that they would be brought to life, i.e. they'd be brought back to Eretz Yisrael. But nobody assumed that the interpretation of the dry bones was talking about Tchiyat HaMeitim. Everybody, there was a machok later on, but the basic interpretation of Tchiyat HaMeitim means Tchiyat HaMeitim for the people living in Babel. It's an important idea that I want to get back to Eov. Let me give you the actual pasuk that's used from the pasuk, which they did not refute. It's in Devarim 11, Yud Aleph, so I'd like you to take a look, if you would. Devarim Yud Aleph. It's going to blow you away. It's an interesting, it's an interesting one. Devarim Yud Aleph, pasuk 9, I believe. And it shows up twice in the Torah, but this is one of them. You'll recognize the pasuk probably almost immediately. No, that's because that's all Adama. No.
That's nine.
Oh, is it nine? So I gave you the wrong one. Hold on. I gave you the wrong one. I was just looking quickly at the article because I have the. It says Sheni Shbati Lavotecha. It's in Shema. It's in Vayakim. It's in Vayayim Shemati Shmu. So let me show you which one it is. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Oh no! Wait. No, that's not it. Hold on. Sorry, hold on. It's really good when I find it. It's, okay, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. The very end of Shema, we say it every day. Which means you may not have known that we're saying Tchiyat HaMeitim every day, but we're saying Tchiyat HaMeitim every day. Bechem al Adamah, Asher Nishba Hashem L'Avotechem, that he promised to your fathers, Latet Lahem. So what does Lahem mean?
To them.
What would you have expected in this Pasuk? Latet Lachem. And in fact, if you look back in the Pesukim, where did he promise? This is the Brit Milah. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at Brit Milah and see what it actually says in Brit Milah. So if you go back to Bereshit Chaf Aleph, I believe, let's see what the promise was. The promise, I think, was to the kids, if I'm not mistaken, and not to Avram directly. Bereshit Chaf, where's it should be Chaf Aleph. Is that where the Brit Mila? Is that not Brit Mila? Is that where No. It's where Akedah Yitzchak.
No.
Akedah Yitzchak.
No.
Yeah. It's Chaf Bet. Wait. Am I wrong? Or is it Brit Bet of Tilly?
The Akedah here in Pasuk A is.
Yeah, no, that's where he's talking to his Nariyam.
Yeah, well, that's what I said.
No,
this is the area.
Yeah, no, this isn't right. It's where, it's not here, it's the Brit Milah. So that's Yud Zayin, I believe. Yud Zayin, I think.
That's the Yud Zayin?
Yeah, it's where he promises him the land of Israel. I think that was a Brit Milah, right? Which parak is this? The very end of Lechacha, right?
Yud Zayin, no.
Yeah, here it is. It's a Yud Zayin.
Perak Yud Zayin?
Perak Yud Zayin is the Brit Milah.
Perak Yud Zayin. No, we have to go with
it. Yeah, Pasuk Zayin is where he promises. If we want, we could start with Pasuk Hay, which is where the Brit starts. Or Pasuk Dalet. Ani hine briti itach, I'm going to make a covenant to you. Vayiti la'av amongim. Hayita la'av amongim. You'll be a father of many nations. Lo yikarei od shimcha Avraham, v'ayah shimcha Avraham, this is after Brit Milah, ki av among goyim nitzaticha, I'll make you, by the way, nitzaticha is clearly future tense, not past tense, right? So there's another example of future, past future. V'hifreiti otcha b'mod mod, v'nat unitzaticha l'goyim, u'mlachim imcha yetzeo, this is familiar, v'akimoti etbriti b'ini u'v'inecha, I'll make my covenant between you and between me and between you. Ubein Zaracha Farecha Dorotam Bitom, the Yovachalohim Zaracha Farecha, and Atati Lecha Ul Zaracha Farecha, at Eretz Mugurecha, I'll give you and your children the land of Israel, Ekel Eretz Canaan, Lachuzatalam, Vayiti Lahem, Le'elohim, I will be them, i.e., in this case, talking to Avram. So who is he promising the things to? He's promising it to his kids. But if we go back to Devarim, what do we say every day in Shema? We say, L'man yibu yimechem v'ebrechem ha'adamash, and yishba adonai la'avotechem, la'teit lachem. That's the simple shot. Moshe is talking to them. I promised to him that I would give it to you. But it's not what it says. It says, I promised him I would give it to him. Yeah, it goes. So with the simple pshat can be understood without chiyat the mitzvah, which is why.
But not only that, but when I promised, you know, when I told your forefathers that I would give it to them, by giving it to you, I'm giving it to them. Because their descendants are an extension of them.
Agreed. There's no doubt about it. Although Chazal,
I don't have a textual problem with that.
Chazal, though, I'll read you what Chazal said. It says, Ad sha'amar lahem, that is, they had stumped him on every pasuk. They proved that he couldn't prove it from every pasuk. Amar lahem mikra zeh, in this pasuk, asher nishba Hashem la'avotechem la'teit lahem, lachem lo ne'amar el lahem. That's what it does. It doesn't try to give proof. It's just trying to say that the word lahem means I'm going to give it specifically to them. What he's trying to say is God, if you go back to Brit Milah, God in fact he says, I'm going to give you the land, and I'm going to give your child the land. So basic principle, at least the Minyan believe that God wouldn't break his promise like that. So essentially, if Avram dies and never gets to see the land, it means that God broke his promise. When God says, I'm going to give you, in Brit Milah, I'm going to give you the land, and I'm going to give your children the land, sometimes I'm going to give it to you together, which means you'll live to see it. And since he was certainly not alive to see it, they promised him to clear the Nathan, so they learned the Psukim. Are you forced to go with that interpretation? I don't know. It seems to be good enough for the meaning. And the Gemara is not shy at saying where Rabbi Gamliel couldn't prove the meaning. On this pasuk, apparently the meaning backed down. And it doesn't stop there. We can go through all kinds of new psukim. So maybe there are other people who are not comfortable with this interpretation. But that's the interpretation that from the Torah, as opposed to from the Nevi'im, that they're going to stick with. That's the story. What's that? Where's that from? That's my story, and that's what I'm going to stick with. Where is that from? I remember where that's from. That's my story, and that's what they're going to stick with. And I'm here to defend Chazal, I suppose. It means that why would God make a promise to Avram Avinu that he was going to break? Now, sure, the way you interpret is okay. If the children get it, it's as good as if the parent, grandparent, as if the parents. It's certainly possible. Yeah, it's absolutely possible, but Chazal are really taking a step further. They're saying, very nice, it's all very nice homiletical. The bottom line is, God said, you, Avram, are going to get it, you and your kid. Now, talk to the Chai, talk to the Zarachai. If Avram doesn't get it, it's a broken of the promise. It's an interesting approach to God and his promises. It's certainly maybe a different one from the Minim, and something the Minim didn't want to say, that God, when he makes promises, he's iffy-wiffy about it. And this is where Kliyat HaMeitim from Torah. But, of course, all of this leaves us. All of you, you're all pointing to an interesting idea. All of this is incredibly wishy-washy. Every last bit of this is incredibly wishy-washy. There are always 10 ways to interpret the psukim. And if this is one of the things that guarantees that a Jew is not going to, and possibly a non-Jew, is not going to get Kriyat HaMeitim, or forget about Kriyat HaMeitim, Olam Abba, whatever that is, then why not spell it out? Right? Why not spell it? It leaves you, why are they playing games here? Why not spell out Kriyat HaMeitim? So here I'd like to read to you, actually there is a pasuk that spells out Kriyat HaMeitim. And this is in Daniel. Let me read to you. It's in Daniel Yud Aleph. It's hard to miss. I'll read you the verse. Where is it? Here it is. Uva'etahi, and it was during that day, Ya'amod Michael Hasar Gadol, Michael, the great officer, Ha'omeid al b'nei amecha, who stood on the children of your people, Va'eta et Sarah, it was a terrible time. They're in Bavel. Asher lo nihiyah miyot goy, Ara'etahi, you never had a time as bad as this. And from the creation of civilization, it was not as bad for the Jewish people as this was. Uveitahi yimaleitamcha koranim sakhatu v'sefer. Now, I'm going to continue on. Virabim miyishenei admat afar yakitsu, and many of those who slept in the ground, they would wake up. Eila l'chaye olam, some of them would come back to life. Ve'eila v'charavot u'dira onoma. Let me read you another pasuk, one more pasuk. Ashrei hamachakeh yagia. Blessed be to the one who waits. L'yamin elef shlosh meot shloshim v'chamisha. What this means, we're in heavy-duty Kabbalah land, I want to stay away from it, but for the days of 3,305. I'm sorry, elef shlosh meot, 1,335. I have no idea what that means. Vata lech lakeit. You wait for the end. What's that?
It must have been one of the Crusades.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Vata
leich lakeitz, you will go to your end, which means you'll die. Vitanuach, and you'll rest. Vitamod legor alecha lakeitz imin, and in the end of days you will rise up again. Okay. So here, almost bar none, we have a clear interpretation of the words of Kriyat HaNeitzim. And here I want to bring the words of the Rambam. The Rambam, in fact, says in a letter called Kriyat HaNeitzim, I'll close in 5 minutes. I'm not going to get to everything I wanted to get to. I'll end with a basic idea.
Ever?
What? No. No. The Rambam asks two excellent questions in his Mamar Kriyat HaNeitzim. And what's interesting is he got really... What happens is, at the end of his life, he wrote the Mishneh Torah, and afterwards he felt that he left a lot of philosophical ideas out. And he says, I wrote Mishneh Torah, and I met big rabbis, chachamim, who swears, Chai Hashem, they knew Torah kol. Halacha, they knew it, the Mechamta Shel Torah, they knew what's going on. But they had no idea whether God has guts or not, and God has a hand, and whether God has a body. They were not clear about it. He said, moreover, I met other people who were considered chachamim that not only determined for sure that God was a physical entity, but they called an apikoros anybody who believed that he wasn't a physical entity. So that's one thing which he's commenting about. And the reason why he says that, so he said, how do you know such? So he wrote this Mishneh Torah. He wrote the Mor Nevuchim. The Mor Nevuchim, though, what he says is he focused on the idea of Olam Haba. Olam Haba, in Kabbalistic terms, is a physical place. When Mashiach comes, sometimes after the king Mashiach comes, people will live forever and their bodies will become something special. This is the Ramchal's review of the Kabbalistic view of Olam Haba. The Rambam rejects this out of hand. He says Olam Haba, and therefore, by the way, Olam Haba and Tchiyat HaMetim are simultaneous rewards. When I get Tchiyat HaMetim, everybody comes back to life. The whole system of nature changes and we live forever and ever. The Rambam rejects this out of hand. It doesn't sit with his philosophy at all. He says, Olam Haba is a non-corporeal world. Who thinks that God has a body? Not only that, Chazal said it, in the times of Olam Haba, you won't eat, you won't drink, you won't procreate. So what do I need a mouth for? God forbid that God would create things that you don't use. Everything that God creates in a human being is necessary. I don't know, why didn't the Rambam say you have a mouth so we could give shirim? I don't know. But he says, if you have a mouth, it's to eat. And if you have a stomach, it's to digest. And if you have a reproductive body parts, it's to reproduce. And if there is no reproduction, because everybody lives forever, so there's no issue of it. He says, Olam Haba, he says, Tchiyat HaMetim, I got two problems with Tchiyat HaMetim, he says, in his Mor Nevuchim. My first problem is, everybody's hot on Tchiyat HaMetim. I got people, do they come, everybody's darshaning Tchiyat HaMetim. Do people come back with clothes? Do they come back not with clothes? Do people come back older? What about babies who died? Do they come back as adults? What about old people? Do they get new bodies? Do they get all kinds of questions. People. And by the way, it's not only the Rambam's time. What turns people on? Tchiyat HaMetim. Choice between talking about heaven and Tchiyat HaMetim, people rather talk about Tchiyat HaMetim for a very simple reason. The Rambam explains in his rather critical view of the masses. He says people like body. People understand the body. I was actually speaking about this, an interesting issue. That is, and he says people understand the spirit as long as it's connected to a body. But people by and large, except for the elites, he says, it's a little bit elitist, they don't understand the spiritual without the physical. I'll give you an idea. It's something that people have a difficult time with. Here's an example. What if somebody's parents, hopefully I'm not going to say anything that's rude or terrible or tragic. What if somebody's parents are only going to have 3 children? And the first one was a Rachmana Letzlan, Lo Aleinu, or miscarriage. It happens. It was a boy. So they have a third child. Does the third child grow up? If the third child is a thinking child, he grows up wondering what would have happened. That is, would he be in his brother who didn't make it? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Am I that, like the me? When you think of yourself, not resurrection, when you think of yourself, you think of your mind, your experiences. Mm-hmm. People don't even see their bodies unless they look in the mirror. When you lie down at night, you think your thoughts. You don't really feel your body. That's lying in those weird aqua chambers, you know, to get away from the world. But that's what happens, really. When you really evolve just into the mind, you forget your body. And then the interesting thing, you could almost identify who you are without any physical form. And then you have to ask yourself, if God wants you to be this physical form, you know what I'm talking about? If my brother hadn't died and my parents hadn't had me, would I not be? or would I have been thinking the same thing in my brother's body? That is, am I a thought that would, and if I didn't get a chance to be born, would I have been born to some like Venezuelan lady? I mean, you know what I'm saying? What is me? What is the idea of a human thought? What makes I? And the Rambam's saying that most people can't separate the I from the body. They need a vessel to put it around. I need to feel something. And I think that's true back in the 1100s and the 1200s when the Rambam was alive, and I think it's true today. People understand a spirit, but only when it's connected to something physical. People love the physical. They can get their minds around it. The idea of a thought without any physical form whatsoever is incredibly difficult. And he says what happened was people left off thinking about Olam Haba. He says Olam Haba was never supposed to be a physical world.
It's not in our realm of experience. That's why we can't think of it.
Yeah, I mean, the Rambam does take...
It's very hard to think
it is.
Something
the Rambam
that doesn't exist as far, you know, that we don't see the existence.
Absolutely. The Rambam's a little bit critical of people who can't attain this knowledge.
Yeah,
but that's the Rambam, but I think we should give ourselves some credit. It's an incredibly difficult thing. We've been working on it for thousands of years, and the philosophers still haven't come up with a wonderful, you know, there's Kant. I think, therefore I am. Does that really mean
that's
if I stop thinking, what? Oh, sorry, Descartes. And the whole existential thing is really the world just a dream, and if it wasn't for my thought process, dream. And then, of course, we have the Matrix, which is another, I mean, this is something which has been worked on over and over, and it's not going to be resolved. And therefore, the Rambam says that Tchiyat HaMetim became a cause celebre, it became a reason in and of itself. He says that's not what happens. And the Rambam really goes, he says something amazing. He says, Tchiyat HaMetim will happen after or maybe before Messianic times. People will be brought back to their life, every soul that lived, and then they'll die. And then they'll live nice long lives in Messianic times where nobody's killing each other, and the world will work as it is, except the fact that nobody's killing each other, there'll be peace on earth. And then they'll die, because the ultimate reward is to be with God. That is to be the same non-physical entity. He even talks about angels. He says, you know, it's bad enough that people think angels are physical and they're not spiritual. And now we have the old question, what about the angels that brought down Sodom? Getting back to Eo, because I want to tie things up. I'm not going to be able to solve all these things.
Isn't there
I
a
apologize.
Young din somewhere in there?
In Olam Haba? Yeah.
According to the Rambam, maybe there's Tchiyat HaMetim and then there's the Yom Din.
I could tell you what the Gra said, because I think the Gra agrees with the Rambam a little bit. The Gra says it's an Eben Shlomo, which is truly a scary Musar book. I would not read the Gra's Eben Shlomo before like going to sleep at night, because it's truly frightening. So he says, what is Yom HaDin? Every Hana that you had in this world that was inappropriate needs to be burnt off in order that you can go and have a non-corporeal life in Olam Haba. So if that's what Yom did is, and that's why it's so scary. I can tell you, if you think that's bad, you should actually read what else he goes on to describe. It's real. I didn't sleep for weeks after reading it. It was very bad. I was careful about everything I put, for every piece of food I put into my mouth, I was careful after he, I tell you, it's not a book to do with the kiddies, not at all. But I think he agrees, I believe, I'm not sure, I believe he agrees with the idea of the Rambam's non-corporealness. He believed Olam Haba is the goal. What happened was, he played up Olam Haba and he played out Tchiyat HaMetim. So everybody said, oh, the Rambam doesn't believe in Tchiyat HaMetim. But Tchiyat HaMetim, I don't think that's what happens is, and I'm not going to have enough time, maybe we'll do it next week, but maybe to leave well enough alone and not just tie up. I don't think what he's saying, even that idea of Daniel could be interpreted like the Valley of the Dry Bones. He'll explain. The Rambam goes on to explain in his Egeret Tchiyat HaMetim, where he responds to those people who says that he doesn't believe in Tchiyat HaMetim. He really gives them what for. He explains why the Pesukim never state Tchiyat HaMetim. He talks about the idea of Tchiyat HaMetim being the reward in this world. It's this world's reward. It's the ultimate reward. He says there are two rewards. One in the world to come, that's Olam Haba, and the other one when everybody dies and leaves after Tchiyat HaMetim. And the other one is Tchiyat HaMetim, which is believing that God has the ability to change nature to give you world reward in this world. And that's something I believe that Eo may be kofar against, but it's not as bad as you think. Eo is saying, when he's saying, when a person dies, he doesn't go back to where he's going. He's saying the same thing that Yaakov's saying and the same thing that Yonah was saying. I go down to my grave, that is, to my despair. I've lost my life. Even in the mirror, I've lost everything, right? That's what we say. I don't think Eov is saying, I don't think Eov is talking about big Jewish philosophical ideas. It doesn't fit the non-Jewish character of Eov. What he's saying is, when a man loses everything, that's it. And even if by some chance something happens, that's not his wealth and shun. That's not his worldview. He has what he has now. And by the way, 99 times out of 100, when a person loses everything, he winds up on the streets of New York walking around, and that's the end of him. So when Eov is talking about the fact that I'm going to be lying on the dirt, it's the same way that Yeshayahu was talking about lying in the dirt, and the same way that Yechezkel was talking about the lying in the dirt. It might be a remez to Chiyat HaMeitim, but 9 times out of 10, it's not. You want a remez to Chiyat HaMeitim? Look in Daniel and look at that interesting pasuk in Devarim. That's it. And maybe Yeshayahu. But not everybody agreed, even with Yeshayahu. When Yeshayahu was talking about lying in the dirt, the Minim said to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, maybe that's just talking about poor people. People are in trouble. And Rabbi Gamliel said, you may be right. And I think that's what we have to do here. I don't want to say that Chazal were wrong about Eov, but it's possible to say that what Chazal meant about him being kofar b'chet ha'meitim, if the Rambam's right, and this is really a stretch, could be the Rambam, again, when the Chazal say something about Eov, that could be one interpretation, not everybody agreed. But according to the Rambam, the idea of b'chet ha'meitim is not the reward in the world to come. The world to come is death. Death, and you go, and you live a pure brain, spirit life with God. And that's it.
Not brain.
Not even brain. I don't even want to say intellect. I don't even know. That's something they have to study. Rambam is a separate course, right? But even there, it's hard to get your mind around exactly what is it. Is it my thinking process? Is it my ability to love, or my ability to figure out that A plus B equals C, but not always? What part of the non-corporal human being is the one that goes on forever? And that's something that I don't certainly have any answers. I'm an expert on the Rambam and other philosophies. Something that's worthwhile talking about. But the idea of Tchiyat HaMeitim is something Rav Alba, I think the Rambam knew, said the whole idea why you have to believe Tchiyat HaMeitim from the Torah is very simple. Because you have to believe that God rewards people in this world. In this world. That God has the ability not only to reward you, but will reward you in this world and change nature. I think what Eov may be being kofar on is not the Tchiyat HaMeitim that we think of when everybody comes back to life. But what he may be kofaring on is a little kofar, a small kofar, which is that God can reward people. That when the end of the world it looks like it's here, it's not over. And this point, Eliphaz is a little bit right. Not because he's... What Eliphaz said, if you're really righteous, you'll get yours. And that's not necessarily true. But the idea that you really sometimes need to hang on forever and see what happens is worth believing in. I think maybe that's what Chazal are trying to say. Not that they believe in Chofer and Chet HaMeitim, they believe that God can't pay people back even when things look miserable. And therefore, I don't think that...
That you have to have a reason for living in it. There's that shred of...
You wait out for the shred of hope, and maybe that's cold comfort, but maybe that's what Chazal were criticizing him. Listen, better cold comfort than no comfort. I don't know, and I don't know if that maybe this is just repeating what Eliphaz says, in which case it's not good. I'll just say one more word, and of course I've gone over time as usual, I apologize. I could only say, I'd like to end words which I find very powerful from Rav Soloveitchik, which he says, Torah Shebal Peh, and here's an important idea I've said before, everybody believes in the afterlife. The Jews didn't invent religion. They invented moral monotheism. They didn't invent religion. Everybody in every religion, we have texts, we have actual ancient texts that predate the Torah. Everybody was talking about the afterlife. So you have to read, the logic is, I may have said this in class before, why would the Torah go out of its way to not mention the afterlife? If it's a book about religion, you have to mention the afterlife. Even the pasuk in Daniel, which is very late, the latest book that was written, period, only there do we get the idea of Tchiyat HaMeitim. Where does Tchiyat HaMeitim show up, by the way, word for word? In Sefer HaMakamim, during the Hellenistic times. Then the woman says, I will come back to life after you can kill me, Mr. Greek, but I'm going to come back to life. There, the woman who lost all of her kids, I don't remember the famous story, Chana. So there she says, although in Makamim she's never given a name, Chazal put Chana onto her because they're trying to relate her to the original Chana of our Nafi. But there she actually says Tchiyat HaMeitim. There it's Beferus. So there's only 150 years later after Tchiyat HaMeitim. But some ridiculous scholars want to say the Jews never believed in Tchiyat HaMeitim. What do you think? They were idiots. They were living in a vacuum. Everybody believed in Tchiyat HaMeitim. People don't think about Tchiyat HaMeitim. So the Rav said like this. Torah Shebichtav is not about Tchiyat HaMeitim. Torah Shebal Peh is about Tchiyat HaMeitim. It's about all of that. Torah Shebichtav is how to live this world in this world. How to make righteousness in this world. And that's why when God says, how could I hide anything from Avraham? Am I going to hide anything from Avraham? It doesn't say because he's a wonderful guy who's going to pray 3 times a day or he's going to come up to me to heaven. It says, he'll teach his children how to do righteousness. That's what the Torah is about, according to the Rav. The Torah Shebichtav is about how to live this world. Torah Shebal Peh is the rewards that you get. And maybe that reminds me a little bit of famous Pirkei Avot, right? Don't serve God because he's going to reward you. Serve God, he's not going to reward you. But that doesn't mean, I know God's not going to reward me, I'm going to serve him anyway. Because servitude is not about rewards. Servitude is simply about doing the right thing, regardless of what happens in the end. And I think that's what Pirkei Avot means. I think that's what the Rav means. And I suspect that's what Eov is having a difficult time.